This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the rainbow community. From Joy 94.9, Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station. And now, your host, Doug Pollard.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Rainbow Report. We're talking about violence in its many forms tonight, and it can take many forms, and so can the means taken to prevent or deal with it. Now, the idea was kicked off by an unnamed Baillieu government MP who was quoted in the paper at the weekend saying there is no anti-gay violence, or as he charmingly called it, pufter bashing anymore, so the government doesn't need to take advice from the gay community. He also said there's no more overt discrimination, so we don't need a GLBTI Ministerial Advisory Committee. Another unnamed MP said, what's a Ministerial Advisory Committee? So, under the circumstances, I think we can fairly say they need one. Now, Joy's own Greg Adkins, who, besides presenting Detours and a host of other activities here, he's on the board and I don't know what else, he also runs the Anti-Violence Project of Victoria, and he kind of begs to differ. There actually is still pufter bashing in Melbourne, isn't there, Greg?
Hugely, Doug, and thank you for having me on. It's a huge issue that still exists in the lives of our friends and even in straight people that are perceived to be gay.
Yes, so this guy's talking out of the out of his rear end, we think. Anyway, we'll go into that in more detail a little later in the show. Violence isn't just physical, it can be psychological too. Cyberbullying is one form that is currently getting a lot of attention. Marissa Monagle from La Trobe University has been looking, however, at the positive side of this equation. The use of Facebook by same-sex attracted young people to combat homophobia instead of spreading it. She'll be speaking at the National Centre Against Bullying conference organised by the Alana and Madeline Foundation in June, but she's going to give us a preview of her presentation tonight. Another kind of violence can stem from inaction rather than action, passively allowing a situation to deteriorate. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence over in Perth are pretty sure something of the kind is happening over there as HIV infections continue to rise. They claim because the peak AIDS body is ineffective. We'll be talking to Sister Mary Jane of the Abbey of the Black Swan, Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And finally today, all these things I mentioned, violence, bullying, sickness, indifference and inaction, can often be traced back to ignorance, division, fear of difference and diversity instead of embrace and celebration. Now, since 2010, Gay and Lesbian Community Publishing, who published the Star Observer, has been facilitating something up in Sydney called Camp Co-op. It was described on its launch by the then company chair Daniel Bone as, quote, an opportunity for those who give many hours to the running of our various community groups to share the enormous amount of expertise and wealth of knowledge that exists in the community for those people who've been doing it a long time to mentor those who are new, and also an opportunity to share resources. Now, Gary Oliver is the Melbourne director of Gay and Lesbian Community Publishing. As I say, publishes the Star Observer. He's about to launch Camp Co-op in Melbourne, and he'll be our first guest in the studio tonight.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report.
Well, as I said, we'll kick off today with news of a new venture aiming to bring together, well, pretty well everyone in gay Melbourne who's working to make life better for us. But better still, I'll let my guest explain. His name is Gary Oliver. Good evening, Gary. Welcome to the programme.
Good evening, Doug, and thanks for the invitation.
Well, you're welcome. This sounds like a very good idea. There's always a very limited pool of expertise and money and everything else going around for the gay community, so it makes sense to share and share expertise and share knowledge.
Correct. This has been on the books of the board of Gay and Lesbian Community Publishing, a mouthful, but better known as Star Observer.
Let's stick to that.
Yes, it'll be much easier. As a community-owned entity, our whole focus is giving back to the community, and we do that a number of ways, and besides support through the paper, at our first board retreat back in 2010, the idea of Camp Co-op was nurtured. Sydney were able to get their act together and produce their first event in November 2010. After a couple of false starts, we're now in a position to launch a similar concept for the Melbourne GLBTI groups.
Now, you're working this in cooperation with the Victorian AIDS Council.
Correct. The second board retreat was held in Melbourne in September 2011, and as part of that weekend, we invited representatives of the GLBTI community to come along and meet the board and hear about what we do as a community-based board. We're all volunteers, and the board is about returning back to the community in all sorts of ways. And out of that process, Matt Dixon, the executive director of VAC, came back to us and said he'd like to be a partner in the process. And we put it on the back burner for a little while to try and find a suitable time in the busy GLBTI calendar to launch it.
Yes, we are pretty full on in Melbourne, aren't we?
Well, in the first quarter of any year, when you've got Midsummer, Pride March, then you've got Chill Out and events like that, to try and get well-worn volunteers to spend another process, going through another process, we thought it was best to wait until that first quarter was out of the way, hence the selection of the May date.
Okay, well, you've got a well-worn volunteer sitting here next to me.
Sure have.
I think that's a really interesting point, Doug. I mean, it's well-worn volunteers. What sustains a community broadcaster like, or a community newspaper outlet like you guys that we didn't know until last September were owned by community rather than being a commercial venture?
Correct. Well, I suppose part of that changed where I joined the board following an ad in the paper in August 2009. I'm now the second longest serving director on the board. And I was interviewed and assessed by the then board as to whether I'd be suitable to come on board. And that was just after they'd taken over the carcass of what was in B News.
Yes, B News and Melbourne Star had actually died. And died and gone to heaven, sadly, yeah. Taking my job with it. but you reinvented the thing, something called a Melbourne Star Observer at that stage, didn't
correct,
you?
Yes. And I saw a challenge in terms of... Well, with the experience of B News, you could imagine that quite a few in the community were a little bit browned off. So part of the role that I took on board was to help project a better image for the paper. Mm-hmm. And part of that process was when the second board retreat was held, Melbourne got the gig, and it was my initiative to have the meet and greet right. As a part of warming up the process. And because I believed, having joined the board and showing my ignorance, I didn't appreciate just what the structure and the process of how the paper operated. Mm. And our sole purpose is to be a community-based, not-for-profit entity to work for and with the community.
So how will this Camp Co-op thing work? I mean, what exactly is it? It all sounds a wee bit kind of nebulous.
Right. I want to speak, just state from the outset, Doug, that we won't be implanting the Sydney model, as I call it, onto mm-hmm. Melbourne. The launch event on the 23rd of May will bring people from the various community groups and entities along for them to determine how they would like it to operate in Melbourne.
Right, but how does it operate in Sydney then? Give us a flavour of how it works there.
The launch event was in November 2010, and out of that process they've done a number of things. Four of the key organisations up there, the Gay Business Organisation, the Star Observer Company, ACON, the equivalent of VAC, mm-hmm. and New Mardi Gras, take it in turns to be the host stroke organiser for one of these events four times a year.
Right.
So we just take it in turn and do all the hack work.
So it's a sort of community speed dating event almost.
There is a touch of that, yeah. And at each event... I suppose the best thing is I can describe it is the various war groups get up and explain their war stories and talk about what they've done, how they've done it. Without naming names, there was a community group that was in financial difficulty, and one camp co-op was spent brainstorming options for that group to get out of its financial right. difficulties. And that... they have now turned the corner and are now much more financially stable and still operating. So it saved that process, saved a group from going under.
Right. How often do they meet?
Every quarter.
Every quarter. And that will be the same here?
if the groups want that. Yeah. Yes. So I want to emphasise, I don't want to force an outcome on
people. No, but
if
you've got a successful model working already, it's obviously, you know, you can at least begin by building on that.
Well, explain that model to people for them to digest and debate it.
How important is that too, Doug and Gary? Because when one gay organisation goes down, the rest of us get painted with the same brush. Mm-hmm. And we saw that with the failures of gay media, print media, before mm-hmm. you guys took over with your publication. So, you know, if it works in Sydney, what a fantastic model for Melbourne.
Well, I mean, it's been a fairly common thing in gay media, I think. It's not just in Melbourne, I think around the world. There have been lots of failures in gay media, lots of people getting overambitious. Lots of people getting into the business who don't really know the business very well, all sorts of things happening. People think it's easy.
Well, another thing we can do is share. For example, coming up later on this year, for memory, the Incorporated Associations Act, which controls a lot of the gay groups in Victoria, is being changed. So one of the things that Camp Co-op in Melbourne could do would be to use that mechanism or venue or event, plus other events, to share what the impact of those changes are and how we can swap policies and procedures and ideas. One of the things that Camp Co-op in Sydney did organise was to get a grant from the City of Sydney, and one Saturday they put on, at a cost of $15 a head, a whole day on governance run by a team from Melbourne from the Our Community organisation. Mm. So there is scope for innovative ideas like that where the group say, we have a need for this, how can we, is it that need common amongst others? Then what can the community collectively then do about resolving that issue?
Okay, so when is this first meeting called for?
Wednesday, the 23rd of May, 2012, at Carstens, which is the old RACV club at 123 Queen Street in the city.
And how do people book a place at this?
Rightio, if they RSVP to Camp Co-op, all one word in lowercase, at starobserver.com.au, they'll be accepted. And we're in the process now of emailing out formal invitations to as many community groups, email addresses and websites that we can find.
Right. Well, hopefully you'll find a few people via the station as well.
I'm
sure Joy is going to be represented there somewhere down the line.
Conrad Brown, the general manager, has indicated that he'll be a starter.
Right.
We're not too sure how many of the rest of the team he wants to bring along.
I'm sure a few of us will come along as individuals too.
Yeah.
I'm sure Greg will be there.
Oh, look, with bells on, I think it's a great initiative, Doug.
I do too. Gary, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Pleasure, Doug.
And thanks very much for the initiative. As I said, Camp Co-op's being jointly developed by Star Observer and the VAC, Gay Men's Health Centre. The launch event's Wednesday, 23rd May at Carstens, 123 Queen Street, 6 to 8. Up next, we hear a lot about cyberbullying, but next we have a story of young people using social media to combat rather than promote homophobia.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. With me in the studio, Gary Oliver from Star Observer, for just to cut that short rather than try and give the company name again, and Greg Adkins, tonight wearing one of his many, many hats, the Anti-Violence Project hat, because that's the theme of the programme tonight. And my next guest has been looking at five Australian Facebook groups that same-sex attracted people have set up to combat homophobia and bullying. And she's found that these groups are proving to be, as she puts it, a fabulous form of connection and community. Her name is Marissa Monagle from La Trobe University, and she joins us on the line now. Good evening, Marissa.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, thank you for joining us. Tell us, what made you decide to go down this particular route, looking at the positive side, as it were, of cyber space?
Why did I choose the positive side?
Because people are always wanting to look at how bad it is, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It's unusual to hear about somebody looking at the good side.
I guess I was personally fascinated by Facebook myself, and I actually worked in the Way Out Project in central Victoria.
Yes, out in Kyneton, which is where you live, I believe.
Yes, that is where I live. And when I started working there, I got accepted to do a PhD, which is what we're going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. And my involvement in Way Out was to actually help the young people set up an internet site.
Right.
And aside to that was a Facebook group. And it sort of grew from there.
Yeah, because they used to, I remember way back, they used to have, I think, a MySpace page, if everyone remembers what MySpace was.
Yes. So it grew from that, I guess. And in researching to help the young people from way out, I did a search on Facebook and was absolutely astounded to find, at the time, this is going back about 3.5 years, there was 500 groups.
Wow.
Set up on Facebook with something to do with homophobia.
Right. So it's obviously a very important tool then.
I think that's what my research has shown. It's a fabulous tool for activism, particularly activism. And I mean, we don't want to underestimate the impact of homophobic abuse and violence, of course. And going back to why I wanted to do something positive, I guess I noticed these young people out there setting up these fantastic groups, gathering all this support, offering all this support, telling their stories, advertising events and rallies, being very political, and it just grabbed my attention.
Mm. Well, one thing we do know is that, that one of the things that does cause problems for same-sex attracted young people, quite often, particularly in rural areas, is that they get disconnected. And if you connect them back up with social networks of any kind, whether they're cyber networks or physical networks, their mental health immediately starts to improve.
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, previous research, even on the internet, has shown, I mean, Lynn Hillier's research, for example, here in Australia, and international research has just shown how fabulous the internet in general has been for same-sex attracted young people. So I guess I just wanted to fine-tune it down a bit and have a little look at maybe what was going on personally for these young people.
Yeah.
So I identified 5 Australian groups.
Right.
It was really important to me for this research that these groups were set up by the young people themselves, not affiliated with, say, an adult-run organisation. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but I was just really curious to see, you know, why, how this had happened without any sort of adult involvement. So that was important to me. So I grew from there. So I actually interviewed. I've done all this research online, so it's been good fun.
Can you tell us a little bit about? Give us some examples of one of these groups.
Okay. Well, I can. How about I give you? I thought about this before I came on. 3 reasons why the groups were started. Would that help? Or?
Okay. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. One of the groups had previously been set up on MySpace years back. This group was associated with a religious organisation. Mm-hmm. Young people were involved in this organisation. The MySpace group had died a little bit. Another young person came along. There unfortunately was a tragic death, a suicide. And so the whole group was reinvented back onto Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
The basic reason for this group is to let young people coming into this organisation know that they will be welcome. There are people that care about them. There are people that will accept them. There are other young people that are same-sex attracted, and it's somewhere to go should they be getting a hard time. So that was one group.
Did it go further than just being on Facebook? I mean, did they actually get into physically meeting up and running events and things? That's
running
great.
Events, attending rallies together, political stuff. Absolutely did. That first group is a national group.
Mm.
One young man set up a group in a rural New South Wales town. He'd been away and come back and realised nothing had changed. So while it was set up just basically for that area, it's grown for the whole of us, you know, sort of there's a lot of people there that are from all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, some of these groups attract allies as well, of course. So it's not just the same-sex attracted young people on them. They've had their allies as well, which is terrific.
Yeah, because one of the things that's been a big growth area, I don't know how much it's grown in Australia, but certainly overseas in the UK, in the US, you're now starting to get a lot of gay-straight alliances.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. One of the other groups was just a young man who just was sick of what was going on at school, and he just thought, unless someone does something about this, nothing's going to change. So he set up this group, gathered. Obviously, a lot of these groups set up initially, their friends join up that they know already, and then it just sort of spreads out, word gets around. I guess young people are net savvy, they do a search, they find the groups.
And I guess this is really good evidence that, you know, what we always say, it only takes one person.
That's right.
To actually sort of make the initial push.
Absolutely.
And, you know, people can sit there forever and say, why doesn't somebody do something?
And then
one day they wake up to the fact that they are that somebody.
Absolutely. Didn't someone famous say that, actually?
I think so, yes.
I can't remember who it was.
It's a good line, and I'm always up for stealing a good line.
Oh, I'd steal that one. It's a beauty. Yes.
What it was, I think the Dalai Lama's version was, it's better to light a match than complain about the dark.
Absolutely.
Which is the same thing, expressed rather more poetically.
Yeah. Well, this is what these young people are doing. I mean, pretty much all of them, when I interviewed them online, I asked them about their experiences of thymophobia, and none of them had not experienced it. And as Lynn Hillier's research shows, most of it was at school.
Yes.
Some in the family. There were some fairly horrific family stories. But despite that, these young people have reached out and found somewhere where they can fit in. And interestingly, some of the reasons why they went looking for the groups were they were wanting support, but more often than not, they actually were wanting to help other young people. Mm-hmm. They wanted them not to have to go through what they went through.
So what would you say to this unnamed Victorian MP who was quoted in The Age at the weekend as saying, there is no more poofter bashing or overt discrimination?
That
needs a week's answer or none, I guess.
Absolutely, but I mean, I'm one of the authors on writing themselves in the latest one, and I'm sorry, but I read, along with all of us, read all those stories, and they were heartbreaking, and yes. It would be nice to think that that didn't exist anymore, but it does. And yeah, sure, things are a little better in other areas, but it exists, and...
Do you think it's better or worse in the rural areas? Because I hear from some people, I was talking to a young man from rural Queensland not very long ago, and he said he actually found there was actually less discrimination in his hometown and at his school than what he'd found when he came to Melbourne.
Gee, isn't that interesting? I mean, I've actually previously worked as a secondary school nurse in Victoria. Mm-hmm. I worked in two country schools. I've never worked in a city school, but I've got to say it was pretty bad, the homophobia. I mean, I'm not saying there was necessarily bashing on that.
No, but...
It was there. Now, whether it's better or not, I don't know, but I guess what was better was that there was a bit more awareness and people were willing to do something about it, including the students.
And I guess in a small place, in a small school, it's actually easier to make a change because it's easier to get to everybody. Greg Adkins, you wanted to come in here.
Yeah, hi, Marissa, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah. Who am I talking to?
Greg Adkins from the Anti-Violence Project of the Gay and Lesbian Community. I'm really interested because it connects with the data that Liam Leonard and some of the others that work with Lynn Hillier did in coming forward and with respect around the levels of unreporting of violence. Where people don't report violence, and 1 in 10 report violence in country rural areas as opposed to 3 in 10 in metro centres. How does that link to your experience?
My experience is with young people.
With young people. Young people today are the older people tomorrow that may still not reporting violence.
I'm just wondering, and I mean this is just me thinking off the top of my head, I don't know, you could probably answer this, you know, when the young people... Pretty much in the towns I've worked in and I've lived around, a lot of these young people are closeted. They shut down until they can get out. Now, when they get to the city, they're feeling a little bit more relaxed and unfortunately that might, you know, bring along violence and that. I'm not sure. But look, I in the time I worked in the school, 6 years nearly, I cannot remember any physical violence in the streets. None that I heard of, but you know, it's hidden, as you said.
Greg and I have talked about this frequently in the past. That just because it's not reported doesn't mean it's not happening.
Absolutely not. And I mean, I guess to go and report something like that in a small town
is very difficult because pretty soon everybody will know about it.
Yeah, it might be your dad, you know, your best friend's dad. That's the local policeman. Not that they wouldn't do anything, but you know what I mean. Incredibly difficult.
Yes, it would all kind of. Ooh, yes.
Yeah. It's tough.
It's really bad enough in the city.
These young people. I mean, I watched a very, very brave young man where I live a number of years ago pretty much be out in a fairly difficult school and copped a lot of abuse, but he held his head up high and he kept on going because he wanted to make a difference. And, you know, gosh, you've got to admire that.
Yes,
really do.
You do. Now, you're going to be speaking at the National Centre for Anti-Bullying Conference.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
That's coming up in June.
That's on the 15th and 16th of June.
And it's hosted by, well, the NCAB is an offshoot of the Alana and Madeline Foundation.
That's correct, yeah.
Good friends of mine from way back.
Yes, fabulous place, yeah.
And so you're going to be doing your presentation on this there.
I am going to be doing it, this presenting some of the latest, just to give a background, the latest data from Writing Themselves In, talking a little bit about my research. But I believe there's a lot of teachers coming, and I really want to show them what some of the young people are doing online to combat homophobia through YouTube, for example, and Facebook. So that's my aim for my presentation.
Well, good on you. I mean, as I say, it's always good to have something positive,
yes,
to report on, rather than the doom and gloom that we're so often doing. Thank you for joining us tonight, Marissa.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome, and I've no doubt we're going to be talking again in the future.
I'd love to. Thank you very much, Doug.
Thank you.
Good
that
night.
Was Marissa Monagle there from La Trobe Uni. Now, up next, time for the meat and potatoes of today's subject, so to speak. As I've mentioned more than once already, a state Liberal MP was quoted in the press at the weekend saying, "We don't need any GLBTI government advisory committees because there's no more puff to bashing and discrimination." My next guest is here to tell him different. That's after this.
I've just heard the most amazing piece of news.
Really? What is it?
Oh, I can't tell you. It's a secret. But OMG, you are totes gonna love it. It's big.
What do you mean big?
I'm talking big, huge, massive, enormous.
Come on, out with it now.
Oh, I really can't say, but it's all about the Joy Radiothon coming up in June. Best prize ever. Here's a hint. Toot-toot, hey, tee-tee.
You're listening to the Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you with the assistance tonight of Greg Adkins, who now steps into the role of guest for a moment or five or 10 or 15 or whatever. He's been involved in SatMag. He's on the board here. He hosts the Detour show. He pushes buttons for Salt and Pepper. Greg's pretty well everywhere. But his baby, so to speak, the thing he's probably most passionate about after Joy, is the Anti-Violence Project. And if anyone knows about puff to bashing in this town, I guess it's you, Greg.
Well, yeah, personally and through friends and through the work we've done for the last 15 years, Doug.
What's the situation like at the moment? I mean, what would you say was the... as soon as I announced what we were going to talk about today, I got a couple of messages through on my personal email saying a friend of mine got bashed outside the Peel the other night and a friend of mine got bashed somewhere else a couple of weeks ago.
Well, 150 metres from where we're broadcasting in City Village here in Bourke Street, we have lesbians that get harassed for holding hands in Swanson Street. Up the road in Sydney Road, Coburg, we've had some really serious assaults involving attacks on lesbians, groups of lesbians by men of different culture. Mm. We've also had gay men being bashed Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve, mm-hmm, further up on in Coburg. It's happening, but they're the ones we hear about, Doug.
Right, and we were just saying before that a lot don't get reported. What's the kind of proportion, would you say, as far as you... Obviously, you can't really say, because if they're not reported, they're not reported, but what is the best guesstimate that's available?
Well, the best guesstimate comes from great work of Australian Sex Research Centre for Sex Health and Society, ARCHES, and Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria. Liam Leonard, the new director taking over from Anne Mitchell, in coming forward and with respect, pins the number through the people responding there as about 1 in 10 in rural areas and 3 in 10 in metro areas of our gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender communities are stepping up and reporting violence. So 9 out of 10 in rural, regional areas and 7 out of 10 in metro centres are not reporting their experience to anyone, let alone police.
Why?
Well, it's about that latent, some could be latent homophobia, where they're not out, where they don't have the support mechanisms out. Perhaps they're not out to their family. Perhaps they, in most assaults involving sexual assault or physical assault, perpetrators want to try and make their victims feel powerless.
Yes.
So when you have the power taken away from you, say it's in your own home and your home's been violated, someone's followed you and bashed you inside your own home, or if they've attacked you in your car or your possessions have been damaged, you're almost fearful of not having the strength or the power to talk about it. And if you're a particular age, such as yourself or myself, Doug, you know, 35, anyone in our age range, we're more likely to have had a narrative from the gay men that we met as we started to come out where it wasn't safe to be out. It wasn't safe to talk and report to police. And that narrative continues on from generation to generation of gay men. We pass it down through the language we use with other gay men.
I guess we do. I mean, it used to be something that I took for granted and that was commonplace when I first came out back in the 1970s in the UK. There was very much this, I suppose I still do it almost unconsciously these days. You practice a certain custody of the eyes, as the nuns call it. You know, you make sure you're not spotted looking at people. You make sure that you don't even think about holding hands with your boyfriend in the street, this sort of thing.
And that's your bird violence.
You're even nervous. I mean, I've been together with my partner for 20 years. It's only in the last 2 years that we've started hugging each other when he gets off a plane from a foreign trip. You know?
And isn't that a sense of freedom that you now have?
Yes.
But that's
it's taken a long while to get there.
What about the subtle violence? Now, we're in the second reign of a Conservative government here in Victoria that, you know, and we've got a bit of a beef with them because they don't fund violence initiatives in the gay and lesbian community, and we hope that they change and we'll have those conversations. But flash back to the last time when Jeff Kennett was in power, you had a gay front bencher that every time he opened his mouth, one of his front bench colleagues would pick his chair up, turn it sideways and put his back to the person and start another conversation on their front bench in a party room meeting of the government at the time. Now today we even have in 2012 we have, you know, and we won't out anyone, but there's another front bencher that's a gay man on their front bench. How can he possibly influence public policy in a way that's going to assist the lot of people being victimised by homophobia when he's not out himself?
I hope he wasn't the one who said there's no poofty bashing going on. Yes, that's a difficult one. I mean, you would think, we've just heard that we've got a gay out gay senator, Liberal senator, coming in WA, in the federal parliament.
Fantastic.
For WA.
Visibility is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. The first thing he says is he's not in favour of gay marriage and he's never been discriminated against inside the Liberal Party. So, I mean, what do you do with people like this?
Well, what have they traditionally done? You know, Andrew Alexander, former MLC in the state parliament, was totally ostracised. Now, whatever things that are happening in his life that led to that point, it wasn't the only conversation that was happening. There was overt homophobia against the man for being gay and coming out as a gay man that was happening in his parliamentary party at the time, and it was very sad for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get the impression, to bring it back to personalities, I don't get the impression that Ted Baillieu is a homophobic person at all from, you know, the times I've met him and talked to him and that.
Well, I don't think even the Attorney General, Robert Clark, is a homophobe.
I'd beg to differ on that.
Well, I don't think he is. He might be, you know, devoutly religious in a very, you know, his own personal way, whichever religion he follows. I don't think he sees himself as homophobia, but I think some of his values might be a little bit different, be discordant with those of a diverse and culturally and sexually diverse community like Victoria.
Now, we mentioned earlier on about ministerial advisory committees. Just for those who don't know, we, under the Labour government, there were two of them, one which assisted Rob Holles, who was the then Attorney General, and one which assisted the, was it Bronwyn Pike when she was at Health, and then whoever?
It was the Health Mac, Gay and Lesbian Health Mac.
The Gay and Lesbian Health Mac, anyway. We were promised that at least one of those two would be continued under the Baillieu government, specifically the Health Mac. It hasn't happened. They, after a bit of pushing a few weeks ago, they actually put out application forms so you could apply to be on this thing. But I understand from talking to people around Parliament that the word is they're hope they might have it up and running before the end of the year.
And what's the model, Doug? I mean, it's fantastic that it's happening, but the model appears to be a medicalised model where everything about our community is framed around HIV/AIDS.
Well, that's always the way, isn't it? I mean, that's the only way we could get anything done under John Howard, was to frame everything in terms of health. It seems to be the one weak spot, if you like, where we can exploit with the Liberal government. They don't want to accept us socially, but they're quite happy to accept us as patients.
but what happens with people that live with violence? I mean, we saw that fabulous research done in my shoes through Beyond Blue just a couple of weeks ago, and it talks really talking about discrimination, prejudice, and the impacts that has on mental health. Where that steps across to violence, and we don't have a GLBT justice MAC, or there's no MAC linking it to the Attorney General.
No, and no prospect of one.
Well, then how can you ever change the law? How can you ever make inroads to violence, and even down to developing social policy that resources and supports community organisations like the Anti-Violence Project and other people working in this space? How can you possibly do that when you don't have the overarching guidance for social policy at the state level?
Well, I mean, if you're not talking to the community in question, you just don't know what you're doing, do you? You can't make laws for a community without consulting with that community, I would have thought. But there doesn't seem to be any appetite for doing that. It surprises me. I mean, we've seen a major change at Beyond Blue. We've seen them come on board. We've seen them start to understand some of the issues that gays and lesbians, bisexuals, transgenders and so forth face, and start to do something about it. You would think, that given the close links there are still between Jeff Cannop, who's the head of Beyond Blue, and the Liberal Party, that at least some of this information would be seeping into the upper echelons of government. I mean,
well, it is. I mean, if you were there, I'm sure I was there. Mary Wooldridge helped speak at the Private Lives 2 launch,
sure,
and not long ago at La Trobe University, and it's brilliant. Her connection around mental health, resilience, the impacts on mental health for gay and lesbian community and trans community, she just gets it. But she's an island sitting up there in Spring Street. If it's not linked to mental health through their health promises at the last election or their budget just announced, there's actually nothing there. There's no oxygen, there's no funding, there's no work that's coming out of
this. Okay,
research.
So who needs to push this? Because Farah Thomason, the woman who wrote that article for The Age, said nothing is going to happen unless that little group of progressives within the Liberal Party, including Clem Newton Brown, Mary Wooldridge, Andrea Coote,
and Ted Baillieu.
And Ted Baillieu himself, actually put some weight behind this. But we don't seem to be, you know, because there is this division within the Liberal government.
Well, Ted put his weight behind retaining the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibility.
Yeah.
Now, there were pushes from the Conservative side, the Robert Clark part of the Liberal Party, to get rid of it. But Ted weighed in and won the day. So perhaps he's the one that needs to champion this cause.
Well, otherwise we seem to be stuck with a roadblock.
And the roadblock still leads 26% of men and 22% of lesbians, that's gay men and lesbians, getting verbal abuse, according to Private Lives 2, launched by Mary Wooldridge. You've got transgender community experiencing almost double that. 46% of trans community experiences verbal abuse. And if we're only looking at the tip of the iceberg with the level of reporting, we've got a huge problem in our community and in the broader Victorian community about lack of resilience, poor health outcomes, tied to violence, not just tied to mental health, but tied to violence underpinning it.
Yeah, we got a message here from Sarah from Noble Park. Hello, Joy. I would like that person in government to walk around and see what he will cop. He's a HomCom traitor. Does he have an identity crisis? yeah, I think he probably does. I think it's more, however, likely to be the case that ambition for his own personal career outweighs anything else in his calculation, which is a great pity. We're going to have to leave it there, but don't go away, because we're going to go on talking about this. In a moment, Dark and Dirty Deeds, as HIV infections in WA, already high by Australian standards, continue to rise. Sister Mary Jane of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence at the Abbey of the Black Swan in Perth joins us next.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
Joy 94.9 presents the Rainbow Report Family Forum on Same-Sex Parenting. A live studio audience with experts, same-sex parents and children come together, hosted by yours truly, Doug Pollard, and Christina Antoniades. If you're already a parent or thinking of becoming one, tune in to Joy this Saturday from 10 till noon for a full and frank exchange of views on all the issues. If you'd like to be part of the studio audience, numbers are limited, but there's still space. Email rainbowreport@joy.org.au. And for any more Joy highlights, see joy.org.au.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
Now, my next guest, Sister Mary Jane of the Order of Perpetual Indulgence over there in Perth, said it herself. How come a bunch of mouthy, dragged-up nuns are doing HIV prevention over there? Well, apparently because no one else is, or at any rate, they seem to be falling down on the job. Sister Mary Jane joins us now. Good evening, Sister.
Good evening. How are you guys?
Well, we're pretty good over here. Now, what's going on over there with HIV prevention? Why are you the ones pushing this?
I know, it's pretty strange, a bunch of sisters having to do it. Look, the issue for us, it's all about getting pamphlets and posters. That's what our key goal is, with information of where to go to help if you've got AIDS, where to get tested, those kinds of stuff. We're wanting to get them into miners, so camp mining camps and at major events like Sexpo. Because heterosexuals are getting HIV as well as gay men.
Yes.
And because Western Australia is a mining state, everyone from all over Australia are coming here. Miners get on the plane and they go out into Indonesia and on the way through and backwards and forwards. And, you know, they don't, you know, heterosexuals just don't know, really. They just think, oh, it's not a risk. So that's...
Yeah, and we know from experience, for example, that where there's a trucking route in a third world country, there's often a line of HIV infection follows that trucking route as the lorry drivers go from place to place to place to place with the modern day equivalent of a girl in every port, I suppose you'd call it.
Well, exactly. And here there's an aeroplane route coming through, and Western Australia now has the highest rate of HIV infection in Australia, and STIs also have been kind of decoupled from HIV in terms of prevention, and they're kind of being it's gone off the ball.
But don't you have an AIDS council over there?
Well, we do, and this is the issue's come up because they're saying all the bloodborne virus agents are saying they don't have the resources, and WAC has also said their staff can't engage with heterosexuals. That was out in Perth newspaper. So they're saying they don't have the resources to go. So we've been lobbying and running around all over the place, talking to us whoever will listen, to just get pamphlets at the very least. We'd like in Sydney Sexpo, they do testing and have the AIDS Council staff actually go there, but they don't do that here in Perth, and so it's been up to the sisters to do it, which kind of, we're a small unfunded organisation, so
sure.
we don't really have the money and resources to be able to educate every heterosexual person.
No, but you do have the ability to make a bit of a splash. Greg Adkins, you wanted to come
Sister,
in.
Sister, I'm the head of the Anti-Violence Project here in Victoria, but way back when, in around about 1997, 98, I remember being a beats worker at Victorian AIDS Council here, running a project that reached out of the gay community into the straight community, and there was one in WA as well. And about the same time, every AIDS council across Australia dropped off doing Beats outreach or outreach in public sex environments. They just stopped doing it. And in those days, you could put condoms out in a beat, you could talk to men at one particular beat and drive 3 hours down the road, and the used condom wrapper would beat you there to the next location. Now, it's such a diverse state, WA. How do you possibly outreach when you don't have resources to all the men that are having sex with men right across the state?
Well, you have to build collaborative partnerships with getting all the bloodborne virus sectors together, which is what we've been wanting to do, and to get a strategy to manage those resources. To if you've got limited resources, if the governments won't give more resources, then you actually have to kind of be good stewards of the resources that you have. The gay community, the issue has come up, gay health has come up in our submission to the Australian Parliament, because what we were saying is there are lots of resources put out in the for the gay and lesbian community, like the WAIDS Council goes to Pride. It has a lot of events for positive, not for positive people, but for, oh, that was a Freudian slip. but they don't. But they do a lot of things for the gay community, and they're saying they don't have resources. So we're saying, look, if you've got enough pamphlets to give out to the gays, perhaps pamphlets for the straights as well.
I think it's fair to say that ACON reaches out to the straight community just as much to the gay community. The VAC certainly does. They have their own straight organisations within themselves, like Straight Arrows, for example.
Which is separate to VAC, but yeah, they do relate to each other.
They facilitate it.
Yeah.
Yes, but there's very big issues between small town. There's differences between small towns like Perth and the eastern states. Like the AIDS councils in the eastern states, in my experience, are very different. And there's also positive organisations WHA Victoria are very strong.
Yeah, you don't have an equivalent over there, do you?
No, we don't have a proper voice for positive people. The peak body happened, which was established by the AIDS Council. It gets $5,000 from WAC each year, but instead of doing that on policy and advocacy, improving treatment access for positive people and the like, to improve life for positive people, they've just been tending to spend the money on dinner parties for a very small group of men. So,
yeah, it's very small. Hey, Sister Mary Jane, can I ask? There's a passion I hear in your voice. Why are you so passionate about this personally?
Well, because it's part of being called as a sister. Like, the sisters have been around for a long time, and we feel that it's part of our mission. And every sister, even our HIV negative sisters, they all get a crash course in how to be PC when it comes to HIV. But also because in Western Australia, there is, us poor sisters are having to be the voice for everyone on these issues, because most of the organisations that get paid to do these things are kind of more interested in parties.
Well, you also had a bit of a problem with the Catholic Church, didn't you? Because didn't they used to run a positive living centre?
Well, that was the thing. I mean, everyone thought it would be a great idea to let the Catholics run a Catholic living centre. Well, hello. I mean, there's no the AIDS Council and Happen and all these other organisations. They didn't. It's like they think that it'll be good to have this new hospital that's built being managed by the Catholic Church. Well, I don't think that's kind of works in practice, and it didn't work in practice at the Catholic Living Centre. They got a huge range of funding from Lotteries West, renovated their building, and as soon as they did the renovations done, they closed it down and turned it into something else. So
it wouldn't happen here under the reign of St. Anne Mitchell, who was made a saint by the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence here in Victoria, at all, that's for sure.
Well, there's a lot of things that go on in Perth that just don't get. We like to sweep things under the carpet because it's conservative and, you know, AIDS, we don't want to talk about that.
When we talked before the program yesterday, you yourself said that it was actually quite difficult to be out about these things and to talk about these things and in a place like Perth.
Yes.
And that's very sad to hear that in this day and age.
Well, it is, and it's in other states and other places of the world, there's a sense that HIV negative people have to take responsibility, whereas in Perth it's been very easy just to get the positive people to keep everyone safe. But AIDS doesn't discriminate.
No.
And so negative people here, they you know, oh yeah, you negative, oh yeah, fine, well, we'll just bareback. And it's also because there's a lot of monopoly service providers, and yeah, they kind of set themselves up to let things go. Like, and the sisters, we in other contexts have been raising legitimate concerns about the issues of health prevention as with high risk groups, you know. And
well, let's hope we can shine a bit of a searchlight on this and get some more attention on it. We're going to have to leave it now, Sister Mary Jane. We're out of time, but thank you very much for joining us this evening, and do keep in touch and let us know what happens next.
Oh, we'll be keeping in touch with you, Doug. Don't you worry about that.
Oh, bless.
And God bless you too. Okay.
Thank you.
Sister Dr. Mary Jane, thank you very much for your time tonight.
No worries, thank you.
Well, it's nearly time to go, but not quite yet.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
Well, I've got a couple of messages come in here. First off, that quote I came up with earlier on about you suddenly realise that you are the somebody who's got to do something about it was apparently Lily Tomlin. Thank you, James, for that one. And James also asks, how can we help Sister Mary Jane fight HIV over there in WA? Well, that's a very good question. And I hope we have some listeners in WA who are going to think about that very seriously.
Doug, we all have social networks and we're one step away from our Western Australian colleagues.
And as we heard from Marissa earlier on in the program, it's not that difficult nowadays with Facebook and stuff like that to get things moving. So maybe that's what we ought to be doing. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening, all of you. Thanks to Sister Mary Jane, of course, to Greg Adkins here, to Gary Oliver, and to Marissa Monagle, and of course to Keza for flying the Boeing. I'd better say goodbye, Greg.
And can I invite you to be part of Idaho next week, May 17th, International Day Against Homophobia?
We're going to talk about that next week on the show. Details of today's show, links about everything we've talked about are at rainbowreporter.com. Podcasts will be available with this show via joy.org.au. See you same time next week with another Rainbow Report.
This has been The Rainbow Report with your host, Doug Pollard. The Rainbow Report, a Joy 94.9 news and current affairs production.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.